Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 125, recorded Tuesday, November 22nd, 2016. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: Uber driver stories and overseas for the election. Coming to you again from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois, with a new episode just in time for the TSA Thanksgiving lines. I'm once again thankful that I'm able to avoid O'Hare this week, the busiest travel week of the year. Since the last episode, I've been in Boston, Baltimore, Charlottesville, Hoboken, and for the first time, I landed at Lehigh Valley Regional Airport in Allentown, Pennsylvania. I gotta tell you, I was surprised how nice an airport it is. I don't know. I was expecting something smaller, you know, maybe just a handful of gates, perhaps a little bit dingier. I don't know, something, you know, along the lines of White Plains, New York. But it was clean and bright with big concourses. Not a lot of people, but a lot of space. Then I had 3 weeks at home, my longest non-travel streak this year. I gotta tell you, there's something relaxing about not packing and unpacking. It also makes you realize how much time you lose in the act of travel. You know, just standing in line for security, to board the plane, to check into your hotel. The whole time I was at home, though, I was actually looking forward to getting back on the road because my next trip was with my wife to Tuscany for our 25th wedding anniversary, revisiting the scene of our honeymoon. We went into Pisa by way of Munich, another new airport for me, but I got to tell you, this time I was much less impressed. Things were going fine. I mean, when we landed, nothing special in that sort of typical German airport style, until we hit security. There were, I don't know, a dozen lines that were just crawling. There weren't that many people trying to get through security. I mean, it was 10 or 11 a.m. on Friday, but I don't know, maybe the security union was on a work slowdown because they had to be going out of their way to work that slow. You know, now, as is my tendency, and we've talked about this before, I bitch tweeted out my frustration. And then Colin McDowell, who follows me on Twitter, tweeted back. He said, "Totally agree. Slowest security of any major airport. It's like Gatwick in the 80s. The shops must be suffering." And the bars, too, I got to tell you. I did not have time for my traditional German airport breakfast beer because we had to sprint to the gate. Now, things got better in Pisa Airport, though. Now, this was not a new airport. We had flown in here for our honeymoon. I had booked a Fiat 500 from Hertz for, I don't know, kind of old-time sake. We'd driven a Fiat Panda 25 years ago. However, I was pleasantly surprised to find an Alfa Romeo in the parking slot. Definitely a step up from the Panda. And it was an automatic transmission. This is the first time I hadn't driven a stick in Europe. At first, I was kind of disappointed. You know, you don't get that chance to drive a stick here in the U.S., and I kind of look forward to it sometimes in Europe. But later, when I was winding through the Tuscan hills and picking my way through the rutted dirt roads, I don't know, I was kind of happy that the car was doing the shifting. So following up, you know, a few episodes back, I complained about having to do an interview for my global entry renewal. I had read online about others getting renewed without the interview, so I was a bit peeved, to say the least, to have to make my way past the lines at the McDonald's in the lower level of O'Hare Terminal 5 yet again. But other than the smell of fries at 9 a.m. on a Friday, I got to tell you, there were times in my past that was actually a good smell, but I think I'm getting too old to start my weekends on Thursday nights. Anyhow, other than the smell of fries, it was a fairly painless experience. I was ushered back less than 5 minutes after I arrived and had a very straightforward interview with the Customs and Border Protection agent. He was a great guy. He really was. It was a good conversation. He asked me a couple of questions, including one about my lost passport. Then he took a new picture and a new set of fingerprints, and I was done. 10 minutes later, I was making my way past that McDonald's again. And as I thought about it, I had no reason really to be, hacked off. I mean, it seems reasonable that they'd want to put an eyeball on me after 5 years. Jim McDonough posted a comment on the Travel Commons website about my Rick Steves rant. Jim writes, "My wife and I love Rick Steves. We call ourselves Rickheads and use his books all the time. But I know what you mean about his fans overwhelming a particular place. It's funny how many people in the States have no idea who he is, but in Europe, Rick Steves sits at the right hand of the Father. Get your restaurant or hotel into his book and you have it made." And while I was able to dodge the Rickheads in Aberdeen, I knew I was toast in Tuscany. I mean, even in November, it was shoulder to shoulder with older, sensibly dressed, empty nester Rickheads toting their blue Bibles through Pisa, Lucca, and Florence. Only when we stayed on a farm in Chianti a couple of miles up a rutted dirt road were we free of them. David Glickman sent me a note recommending a more detailed guide of Scotland for my next visit. David writes, "Hey, living outside of London, I'm not sure I have ever read a Rick Steves guidebook, but I recommend getting hold of Peter Irvine's really excellent guide, Scotland the Best, before your next trip to St. Andrews." David continues, my wife and I are regular visitors to the States, and my wife travels to Madison, Wisconsin, about six times a year through O'Hare, so we really enjoy your podcasts. We have just returned from a trip, and boy, is your country now expensive to us poor post-Brexit Brits. Well, David, Madison's a fun little town. I kind of like that town. I think you have fun. There's nothing wrong with hanging around in Cheesehead Land. I got to tell you, I immediately hit Amazon and ordered the new 2006 edition of Scotland the Best. It was very detailed with lots of suggestions. I'm looking forward to giving it a workout on my next visit. And I can imagine that the U.S. looks very expensive for pound or euro-based tourists. I mean, the euro dropped another 5% in the week and a half since we've been back from Italy, and it was already a good deal when we were over. You know, about a year ago, actually in episode 117, I first talked about Revolut, a virtual and real chip and pin debit card with really great exchange rates. I first used it last fall on a trip to the UK. I'd transfer funds into it using my US debit card and then manage conversions from dollars to pounds or to euros with really a really great smartphone app. It was great, but note my use of past tense. Over, I'd say, the past 3-4 months, the service has been deteriorating for US users. First, they began charging a 3% fee on fund transfers using U.S. debit cards, though I soon found out that they only charged the fee if the transfers were in dollars. Now, if I transferred the funds in euros or pounds, there was no charge. I mean, weird, but okay, it worked. But then when I tried that trick before my trips to Scotland in September and then Italy this month, no dice. They'd close that little door on me. All U.S. debit transfers were blocked. Now, I suppose I could have tried an interbank transfer using something like TransferWise, but I tell you, at that point, it's just way too much of a hassle. In response to some tweets and chats on their mobile app, they say they aim to change this ASAP, but it's been 3 months now and no update. I have to retract my prior praise from Revolut, and I'm deleting the app from my iPhone. Now, I did mention in the last episode that the lack of a chip and pin card in Scotland really had become less of a hassle with the spread of contactless card readers that let me use Apple Pay on my iPhone. Indeed, when I was using Apple Pay, it was actually quicker than a chip and pin card. I didn't find that same convenience, though, in Italy. I didn't see one place with a contactless reader. I mean, other than large restaurant bills, we had managed to find tables at a few Michelin-starred restaurants during our stay. I actually ended up paying just mostly with cash. It seemed a lot less of a hassle. You know, now, over the past 3 to 4 episodes, we've had, you know, one blurb in each episode that's talked about travel security. So, you know, the last episode was about VPNs, virtual private networks, and the one before that was about this new wave of called video jacking. And so in this installment of travel security, I want to talk about car rentals and specifically about when you use Bluetooth to pair your smartphone to your rental's auto system. Now, I do this all the time. It's safer, right? You know, you can talk hands-free and do conference calls where I'm driving. Which, you know, I mean, you think about it, you're avoiding both a wreck and a ticket in most municipalities. And it lets me listen to sort of podcasts or Pandora or Spotify when I'm driving around instead of, you know, fiddling, trying to find a local radio station that I don't hate. However, if you do this, you do need to remember to delete your pairing when you return your car. There has not been one time yet when I haven't gone through a car's audio system and deleted, I don't know, some, you know, 3, 4, 5 pairings before then pairing my own. And if you scroll through the devices on the display in the audio system, they've all got personalized names like, you know, Timmy's iPhone. And most phones, by default, will download your contacts to the car when it's paired. And I mean, that makes sense if you're pairing it with your car, but not when you're pairing it with a rental. You don't want to be dumping all your contacts out. I found that you can turn this default behavior, this downloading behavior off on an Android phone, but I still haven't found how I can change that default in an iPhone. So instead, every time I pair my iPhone, I kind of wait for it to get to a point in the pairing and then quickly turn off the synchronized contact switch. You got to remember it every time, though. But I got to tell you, for most people, you know, they'd leave behind a profile in their rentals with all their contacts and all those folks' phone numbers. As you can imagine, from a security standpoint, that's just bad in so many ways. And hey, if you've got a thought, a question, a story, a comment, a travel tip, a security tip, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address is comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com. You can use your smartphone to record and send in an audio comment. Twitter messages, like Colin, to M. Peacock. Post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page. Or you can always go old school like Jim did and post your thoughts on the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is Uber driver stories. You know, I find myself taking more and more Ubers as opposed to regular cabs. I mean, I like cabs. I like cab drivers. But Uber is usually a better experience. Thumbing the app is so much easier than trying to hail a cab or finding the number of the local cab company and then dealing with an often, usually, cranky cab dispatcher. And the condition of the car, of an Uber car is, I got to tell you, 9 times out of 10, vastly superior to the complete beat-to-hell cabs that I usually get. I got to tell you, the Baltimore cabs that I'd take from the Inner Harbor to the airport were some of the worst. But then, you know, in Chicago, I get picked up by an Uber driver in a brand new BMW X3. And then coming out of Newark Airport, I get a spotless Mercedes SUV. I don't know. I think, indeed, I think 9 times out of 10 has given cabs way too much of the benefit of the doubt. I have yet to ride in an Uber car that was worse than a cab. But I think the best thing about taking an Uber is the driver stories. Every Uber I take, I ask the driver how he or she likes it, how long they've been doing it, what else they do. You know, I mean, if it's not a full-time gig, which is definitely in the minority. a lot of the drivers that I've talked with are retired. I mean, one guy in Vegas told me he was a bit bored and lonely. He wanted to get out of the house, but really had no place to go, and he didn't want to go gamble or sit in a bar at 10 o'clock in the morning. So driving Uber gave him a reason to get off the sofa. A retired fireman in Charlottesville, Virginia, told me he drives the late-night weekend shift when the kids from UVA are willing to pay just about anything, or actually willing to charge just about anything to their parents' accounts, for a ride home from the bars. He told me he just gets huge surge fares, but then again, he is driving until 3 or 4 in the morning. A woman in Baltimore who picked me up, she was a retired teacher and principal, and she told me she drives to take a break from studying for her PhD. Now, you're retired and you're studying for a PhD. That's a whole nother story, but she said she gets too bored, you know, sitting around the house, and she likes to drive. So she told me it was her husband who got her to sign up for Uber. She was driving him crazy around the house. Now, another guy, a non-retired guy, but he's studying full-time for his CFA exam, Chartered Financial Analyst, and he does the same thing. He drives during his study breaks. He said it's fantastic. He said, if I weren't driving Uber, he said I'd be jacking around on social media. He said, so, you know, rather than depressing myself, he said, I'm making money. I find actually that many of the morning drivers, the ones that are taking me from my hotel, say, to a client site, are doing, it's just a little moonlighting, fitting in a few rides before they go to work and then again at the end of the day. I was surprised to find out actually that Uber drivers don't know your destination until they accept the ride. Now, I don't know, thinking about it, it kind of makes sense. It keeps drivers from cherry picking, you know, say the long rides or rides to the airport. But one woman told me, she said she accepted a ride and only after she accepted it, she find out it was to some suburb 40 minutes away, and she only had a quarter tank of gas. So that was, she said, it was a little bit awkward having the guys wait while she pumped some gas. Now, of course, there's more to ride sharing than Uber. I mean, I've also used Lyft. Actually, when I was out in Vegas, there was a short time that only Lyft could serve Vegas Airport. Uber couldn't, and so we all signed up for Lyft. And actually, during busy times now, in places where both of them serve, and they serve most big cities, and during busy times, I'll fire them both up to see which has less of a surge charge or a shorter wait time. Most drivers, I found, will drive both, and my unscientific polling, most, I find, prefer Lyft, but they get more traffic from Uber. One driver told my wife that he prefers Lyft because Lyft riders talk more. And then he proceeded to unload his entire life story on my wife and her friend for the next 40 minutes while they battled traffic into Chicago. I got to tell you, I'm always interested in how the gig economy is working for these drivers. I mean, for a while we were reading that the sharing economy, the gig economy of Uber and Airbnb was the next wave. But I don't know, it feels like the froth seems to have worn off of that wave. You know, a lot of the Uber drivers I talk to need the extra money, but they often wonder if it's worth it. That Mercedes SUV driver who took me from Newark to Hoboken wondered if it was worth the hassle of waiting for an airport fare. And actually, the only full-time Uber driver I've ever spoken to was in Baltimore, and she says she makes more money delivering packages for Uber than she does delivering passengers. And the packages, she said, were much quieter and much more pleasant. But I tell you, as good as these stories are, the best one I recently heard was actually not from an Uber driver. It was from the manager of the farm in Chianti, where we stayed for a couple of days at the beginning of the month during our trip over to Italy. He had lived in Chicago, in the Chicago area, for about 10 years. He had gotten his PhD in geochemistry at University of Illinois, and then worked at Argonne National Labs in the suburbs doing research. After a while, though, he missed his family and the countryside where he had grown up. And I got to tell you, that Tuscan countryside is a hell of a lot prettier than the Chicago suburbs. And so he moved back to Tuscany, married, had a kid, and now manages a cattle farm with a growing sideline in agritourism, hence us staying there. I don't know, forget about driving for Uber. I want to be this guy. We'll be right back. So the second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is overseas for the election. Now, my wife and I flew to Italy the Thursday night before the election. We'd both voted early, so we didn't shirk our civic duties. What we did do, though, was leave behind that last blast of election ads and media coverage. I mean, the one bad thing about Game 7 of the World Series going into extra innings was that it gave more time for political ads. We were very happy to leave all the noise behind us. Now, on Election Day, we had dinner in a very nice restaurant, one of those Michelin restaurants, that was in a small town about 45 minutes of switchback and rutted dirt roads away from our hotel. I can tell you, on the way back, I think we dodged a boar, a wild boar, and a deer as we crossed back over the ridge of hills and headed down toward our hotel. We went to bed while the polls in the U.S. were still open and, you know, really didn't think a thing about it. The next morning, Wednesday morning, I woke up about 7, you know, which ended up being about Tuesday midnight in Chicago. I picked up my iPhone, glanced at it, and saw a cascade of notifications from the Wall Street Journal and Chicago Tribune about the election results. The election still hadn't been called. But by the time we sat down for breakfast, it was done. Donald Trump had won. The Austrian guy working the desk and the breakfast, it was kind of a small hotel, laughed when he walked up. He said, well, you know, at least you guys aren't having a do-over. The July Austrian presidential election was set aside for problems with absentee ballots, and they still hadn't done the revote. Or Spain, he said, which has gone through two elections without getting a government. Now, look, Travel Commons has never had a political point of view, and I'm not about to change that here. I have good friends on both sides of this debate, and I'm not getting into, you know, which side should win, might win, didn't win, or any of those opinions about that. What I will say, though, is that I, like many others, was surprised by the results, given sort of all the predictions we'd heard right up until we were wheels up at O'Hare. And so all through breakfast, just really, I mean, we were just shocked, surprised, surprised at the result. And we ended up refreshing our Twitter feeds and hit the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times apps, just trying to catch up on the coverage we'd slept through the night before. And whereas the night before, we were happy not to hear about politics, now we were digging for an explanation around this upset. Now, after an hour of this and an extra cappuccino, we then just set the phones aside. And honestly, it was really nice that we could do that. We could walk away from the disbelief and in some quarters what was becoming a bit of a panic at the result and from all the noise that was spreading over the media, both social and traditional, and what was happening at school campuses. And I can imagine, you know, some of the conversations that were going to happen in the workplaces. We could set that aside. And instead, we were driving the little Alfa Romeo through really some beautiful Chianti vineyards that were brilliantly yellow with the vine leaves that were changing colors for the fall. We ended up stopping off at Antonori Winery for a bit of a tasting, and then we continued our drive down into Florence, dropped the car off. Actually had a great experience at Hertz dropping that car off. But, you know, while we knew that we would eventually get pulled into the post-election vortex, we also knew that we were lucky. We were lucky. We would be in our cone of silence, our little Italian cone of silence, for another 3 days. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 125. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Check out the show notes for comments, links, names of the bridge music. As always, you can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along text or audio file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, to M. Peacock on Twitter, write them on the Travel Commons wall on Facebook, or is it a wall or a page anymore? I can never keep track of that. Post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, tweets, post comments on the website. have a safe, if for folks who are traveling this Thanksgiving, have a safe trip. I hope you enjoy the time with your family. And until we talk again, thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Take care. Bye now.